Hello and welcome back to the Elizabeth Olsen Podcast. I'm your host, Brooke, and today's episode is one that I've seen before, but couldn't tell you anything that happened in it before rewatching it. I'm not even kidding when I tell you I couldn't even have told you what the genre of the movie was if you had said the title to me. It was basically like watching this movie for the first time since I apparently didn't pay attention to it at all the first time around. In today's episode, I will be discussing the film Red Lights, directed by Rodrigo Cortez. Red Lights was released on July 13, 2012 to the public, but premiered at the Sundance Film Festival on January 20, 2012. This film was one of two films that Elizabeth had premiering at the Sundance Film Festival that year, so basically everyone was calling her the Queen of Sundance, which I thought was pretty funny.
Dr. Matheson! You can't imagine how pleased I am to see you.
This is Dr. Matheson, actually.
That's Dr. Buckley.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nice to meet you.
There are two kinds of people out there with a special gift. The ones who really think they have some kind of power. And the other guys who think we can't figure them out.
No, Leo.
Correct your position to your right. Richard Vargas.
I'm calling Richard Vargas in the name of God.
They're both wrong.
So have you been working for Matheson long? Or are you a psychologist too, or a magician?
Actually, I'm a physicist.
So why do you do this?
Do what?
Investigate fake paranormal stuff.
Simon Silver, perhaps the most celebrated psychic of all time, will visit us here in just under 3 weeks. There will be a mad rush for tickets.
Are there no real challenges left out there?
Silver is a real challenge.
Silver's already been investigated.
Yeah, like 30 years ago. We should investigate him now.
Better not to know.
He's dangerous, Tom. Stay away from him.
There's only one way of gaining access to the truth.
You've got no idea what you're getting yourself into!
The film starts out with an old blue car driving down a snowy road. The car is driven by a young man named Tom Buckley, played by Cillian Murphy, and an older woman named Margaret Matheson, played by Sigourney Weaver, is asleep in the passenger seat. Tom keeps repeating her name until she wakes up, and then when she responds, he says she should get some sleep. They slightly smile at each other, and she rests her head on the window and goes back to sleep. Tom takes a duffel bag out of the trunk, and the two of them walk towards a house where a man named Michael is running towards them. Michael mistakenly walks up to Tom thinking he's Dr. Matheson, but finds out that he was mistaken and he apologizes. Michael is very excited to have them there and tells them that they haven't been able to sleep for days. A woman named Sarah starts to make her way down the stairs when suddenly a loud noise comes from the ceiling. They all stop and look at where the noise came from, and a woman named Tracy asks everyone if they heard him and says he's a bit angry today. Tom asks who is angry, and Michael ignores the question and just says that Tracy has been a real help to them. Tracy goes to shake Margaret's hand, but Margaret walks away. Tracy and Tom introduce themselves to each other and find out that they're both physicists, but mid-conversation, everyone starts to make their way up the stairs. Margaret is making fun of Michael and saying that she knows Tracy has been a real help the past few days. They all enter a room where a little girl named Susan is sitting down on the floor and playing with a toy house. Susan says hi to everyone, and we learn that Sarah sent her other daughter named Julie to Vermont for a few days. Tracy suddenly interrupts and says that everything is ready. All of the adults are in another room where everyone but Tom is sitting at a circular table and there is a red light placed in the center. Tom is at another table messing with something that looks similar to a radio. This is when we are learning that Tom and Margaret are there to investigate a claim of paranormal activity. Tracy says that she's about to begin a session and tells everyone that no matter what happens, they should not break the circle because it can be dangerous. Tom starts making a recording explaining what's going on. Tracy closes her eyes and starts breathing heavily and making noises. As this is happening, the temperature in the room begins to slowly drop, and Tracy starts asking someone to speak up because she can barely hear them, and then there is a loud crash and Michael screams. The table starts to shake, and Tracy asks whoever she's talking to, be gentle, because they have come to talk to him. The table then begins to shake even more, and then abruptly stops. There is a crash, and the table begins to levitate, and Tracy is just saying, it hurts, over and over. Margaret looks unamused and looks over at Tom. Michael and Sarah are freaking out when Michael breaks the circle, and Sarah lets out a loud scream before passing out. Susan breaks into the room and runs towards her mom, saying she's scared and she wants to leave, and her mom says okay. Margaret and Susan are sitting outside quietly on the patio when Margaret asks if she misses Vermont. Susan just shakes her head yes, and they start to talk about life in Vermont. Margaret asks who came up with the idea for the loud bang in the closet, and Susan said it was Julia. She admits it really scares her dad, and that her mom wants to leave the house too. Margaret says they should make a deal that if Susan promises not to scare her dad anymore, then she won't tell her dad that it was all fake. Susan says that she didn't do anything with the table, and Margaret tells her that she knows that, and then says that her sister, Julie, is going to be really, really sad, and Margaret agrees with her. Margaret and Tom begin to leave when Michael runs towards them, saying that they never found out the problem, but Tom says if the noises happen again, then give them a call. An airplane comes screeching overhead and lands on a tarmac. A man starts running his fingers along the overhead bins of the private jet when the pilot says it's been an honor to fly the man there. He makes his way down the plane steps and takes off his glasses, showing us that he's blind. The man is named Simon Silver, played by Robert De Niro, and he is followed by a woman. Margaret is teaching a class about how they can lift up a table and make it look like it's levitating, and Tom is the one doing the demonstration. A young woman named Sally, played by Elizabeth Olsen, raises her hand and stands up and asks if Margaret is saying that all paranormal activity is fake, and Margaret tells her no. She just says that most of it has a natural explanation. Another student asks if she has ever come across something that she wasn't able to explain due to an anomalous ability, and she basically tells him no. Sally and Tom make eye contact during the explanation, and Sally smiles. Sally then asks if the existence of any kind of paranormal power is possible, and Margaret says that after 30 years of doing this, she has yet to see a single miracle.
I know what you're thinking. It's not scientific. But you need darkness to develop a photograph, don't you? Miss Owen.
So are you saying that all paranormal phenomena are frauds without any exception?
Actually, no, I'm not. The majority simply have a natural explanation or are the result of subjective interpretation.
But how do you establish proper controls?
It's not difficult. In a case like this one, without any special preparation, we would sit the medium against the wall and place two cards behind his elbows. Then if he moves his arms to shift the table, the cards will fall. If the cards remain in place, only the spirit of a very friendly stagehand is going to be moving that table. That's the principle. Or if you prefer, you can mark out a security perimeter for the hands to ensure that no pressure is applied outside the center of gravity. For instance, for the round table, it will only move if pressure is exerted here or here.
Have you ever come across a single case that couldn't be explained, like the existence of an anomalous ability?
An anomalous ability? Like what? Like running 100 meters in under 10 seconds? Like composing a masterpiece when you're stone deaf? Your brain may be the exception, Ben, but most brains carry out a dazzling array of complex mental processes every second. 100,000 million neurons in constant synaptic communication geared to generating and regulating our sensations and perceptions. How we reason, how we think, our emotions, our mental images, our attention span, learning, memory. Are these not merits enough for the brain without it having special powers as well?
So you're saying the existence of any kind of paranormal powers is impossible?
What I'm saying, Miss Owen, is that after 30 years of investigating all kinds of phenomena with the right controls in place, I have yet to witness a single miracle.
Tom and Margaret are leaving the room when another professor walks up to them and mentions how he sat in on their class and tells Margaret that he admires her skepticism. We are watching an older episode of a TV show with Simon talking to the host about one of his tricks. A documentarian voices over and starts to give some background information about Simon. He says that Simon became popular in the 60s, with his fame continuing to grow over the next decade before announcing his retirement in 1975. People assume he retired once a skeptical journalist died of a rare heart attack during one of his shows. Tom is watching the documentary on a TV while he works on some of his electronics. The TV shuts off, and Tom seems a little annoyed because he thought Margaret shut it off, but it turned out to be Sally, and she apologizes. Sally turned it off because apparently she had been trying to get Tom's attention, but he was so invested in the show that he didn't hear her. He embarrassingly laughs at his mistake, and Sally asks if Margaret is around. He says no, and Sally asks if she can just leave her assignment with him. The two of them are then sat down at a diner, and Tom is showing her a magic trick with a quarter. He makes the quarter disappear underneath Sally's milkshake, and she smiles. They're making small talk about school and about his job, and she asks him why he bothers investigating paranormal stuff. He gives a story as an example and asks, "What if a woman who went to a psychic saying she had stomach pain, and the psychic said that it was nothing, but then down the road the woman finds out it's stomach cancer and it's too late to treat, then would she be thinking why bother?"
Where'd it go?
Lift your glass, please.
Where did you learn to do that?
Can't always trust your eyes. You did most of the magic by looking in the wrong place.
Oh, well, you're really taking the fun out of it.
Simpler the better. That's the principle. The only way to pull a rabbit out of a hat is by putting it there in the first place. Open it.
It's in your left hand.
Did you see that?
No, I got lucky. Yeah, the class is really great, you know? Makes you think. So have you been working for Matheson long? Or are you a psychologist too, or a magician?
No, I'm not a magician. I'm a physicist.
So why do you do this?
Do what?
Investigate fake paranormal stuff. Don't you think it's a bit weird?
I just try to help Margaret.
I mean, what for? If someone claims to have powers and they actually don't, who cares? Why bother?
Why bother? If your mom was one of those people who went to see a psychic because her stomach was bothering her, and the psychic told her that it was nothing, that it was just a touch of gastritis. But then later on, you found out it was stomach cancer, and it's too late to treat. Do you think then you'd say, why bother?
Sally thinks about the question but doesn't give an answer. Tom is showing her another trick when a new story suddenly breaks that catches Tom's attention, and it states that Simon will be visiting their city soon. Margaret is in her office typing on a computer and takes some pills before walking away from her desk. As she walks away, we see on her computer that she was looking up a lot of different articles and news stories about Simon. She makes some tea and then looks at a picture of her younger self holding a little boy. She is startled by a sudden phone call and spills her tea all over herself, but when she answers the phone, no one is on the other line. She begins to clean herself up and sees that the spoon in her cup is now mysteriously bent. Margaret's car is driving up a dirt road towards a home when we see Tom, Margaret, a young boy, and his parents sitting at a table. The young boy is holding a pencil and is staring at a big piece of paper, and the entire wall behind him is covered in paintings. The mom asks her son, named Stevie, if he wants music because it helps him, and he doesn't answer her, but she starts blasting hard rock music. The mom is yelling over the music to Margaret and talking about how they don't paint, only Stevie does. Margaret and Tom are in the back of the car laughing about what they just experienced. Stevie was supposed to be an automatic painter, but didn't paint anything while they were there. Margaret tells Tom that if it were just her, then she wouldn't continue what they do, and tells Tom that he could have a brilliant career at any university, and asks why he sticks around. He just says that he likes it. After a quiet moment, he mentions that he thinks someone else should join the team, and Margaret immediately knows that he's talking about Sally, and she says she's a little young. Margaret asks Tom to drop her off so she can check on someone named David, and then we learn that David is her now adult son who is in a coma. She starts explaining that people believe in ghosts because that means there is something after death, but she doesn't believe that. She explains that if she believed in an afterlife, then she would take her son off of life support, but since she doesn't believe in that, she's keeping him alive. Margaret starts to talk about two types of people out there, the ones who think they have a special gift, and the others who think that they can't figure them out. She then says that they're both wrong.
The reason people believe in ghosts is the same as the reason they believe in haunted houses or tunnels of light, because it would mean that there was something after death. I only wish there were. But I'm not prepared to let my beliefs be determined by my desires or my needs. If David woke up now and looked in the mirror, he wouldn't even know who the man was staring back at him. He wouldn't know who I was. If I thought for one second that there was something else, I would shut off all this crap and let my son go.
Margaret.
A contactee was visited and raped on a daily basis by an extraterrestrial, savagely possessed every night. So she goes to a hypnologist and the visits stop. So she goes back to the hypnologist and says, can't you just make him come back once a week? You know, there are two kinds of people out there with a special gift. The ones who really think they have some kind of power, and the other guys who think we can't figure them out. They're both wrong.
Band music starts playing as a seagull flies above, and then we are outside of some kind of big theater. Crowds of people are walking around all bundled up, smiling, eating hot dogs, when we see Margaret and Sally sitting in Margaret's car while Margaret takes pictures of Tom walking around in the crowd of people. She asks Sally if she's a little young, and Sally asks, for what? And Margaret just says, right. Sally's confused about what they're looking for when Margaret tells her red lights, which are basically people or things that shouldn't be there or look out of place. Sally then points at a suspicious man walking around taking notes on people, and Margaret tells her good job before taking pictures of him. Tom then purposefully bumps into him and apologizes before getting in the car and showing that he pickpocketed a red booklet from the man.
Aren't you a little young?
For what?
Right.
So what are we looking for?
Red lights.
Red lights?
Discordant notes, things that shouldn't be there. Like that guy over there.
Hey, what about over there?
Not spotted.
I'm so sorry. That's totally my fault. I wasn't watching. I'm sorry.
Give me that.
I'm sorry.
You'll just get lost now, will you, buddy?
Oh, geez.
Candy for my baby.
Good. In we go.
The three of them head inside of the theater, and Margaret begins talking to a cop. We learn that Margaret is working with the cops because she is sure that the mentalist who is performing is a fraud, and she wants to prove it. They all sit down to watch the performance, and Margaret says that she's heard all of this before. Tom has a radio type of thing set up, and he taps into the mentalist's radio, where it turns out that he has someone speaking to him through an earpiece. Tom loses the signal because the people are using inhibitors, and he is trying to get the signal back. The woman in the earpiece has the mentalist pick a young woman out of the crowd and starts revealing personal information about her, and we learn that she has stomach cancer. Tom is trying to isolate the frequency, but is struggling. The young woman walks up to the mentalist, he throws her backwards, screams at her stomach, and then tells her that she's cured in the name of God. Sally says that he's good, and that's when we learn that the mentalist has worked with Simon, which explains a lot. The mentalist picks another man out of the crowd, and the camera pans up to a hidden room where a woman is speaking through a microphone. This is the woman who was talking to the mentalist through the earpiece. And we see this suspicious man from before who was outside taking notes on people, also in there with her. Margaret knocks on the door and barges in with the police and holds up the red booklet that Tom took from earlier, and you can tell that she's really pleased with herself that she just busted them.
Judy, don't be scared.
Get out! Leave Judy! Stop her! She doesn't need you anymore! Judy, you're cured. Shout it out.
I'm cured.
Shout it out in the name of God.
I'm cured.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
I got it.
All right, Leo. Richard Vargas. I repeat, Richard Vargas.
I'm calling Richard Vargas in the name of God.
No, Leo, correct your position.
I'm calling Richard Vargas in the name of God.
He should be on your right.
Don't be afraid on account of your sins, Richard. Stand up and accept the light of salvation.
He really knows his moves, doesn't he? He had a good teacher.
He worked with Silver for over a year.
Simon Silver, the blind guy?
Okay, so he's here with his sister, Maria, and his mother, just hang on, Dorina.
Richard, don't be afraid. Dorina and Maria aren't afraid. Listen to them. They want you to come to the light.
Watch out, Leo. Don't get in line with them. I'm sorry, my fault. I think everything's all right. Everything okay?
You gotta be shitting me.
Do you copy me? You let me know you're still there, Leo.
I'm with you, Richard.
I'm sorry, my fault.
You get me, Richard.
I repeat, 423 Wilbur.
You guys go position yourselves in the center block now. We're going with the woman on crutches, row
32. That was close. Did you check the auxiliary control? No. No, Leo, stop touching his chest, please. His arm is the problem. You know, one of these days, somebody's going to work out these Argentinian. Then we'll be in real shit.
Hey, you guys lose this. A lot of cancer.
Simon is now on TV to discuss whether he's going back on stage or not. Simon and the host start talking about his last show, the one where the man died, and the host mentions how it's a strange coincidence. Simon gets defensive and obviously does not want to talk about it. The interviewer then takes out a spoon and says that she's been waiting 30 years for Simon to do a trick, and he guesses that she wants him to bend the spoon. She's amazed how he knew and thinks that he read her mind. He laughs and says that the spoon handle has been sticking out of her pocket for the last 30 minutes, and the crowd laughs. This part confused me because Simon is blind, but no one questioned how he knew that the handle was sticking out. Margaret shuts off the TV, and her and Tom are on the move again. She hands him a picture of a man levitating in a position with his legs crossed, and she jokes that it hasn't been digitally retouched at all. Tom thinks it's because of a trampoline, and Margaret says that there are no real challenges left out there. Tom mentions that Simon is a real challenge, and Margaret says that he's already been investigated before, and he doesn't interest her. But Tom really wants to investigate him, and thinks that the reason Margaret doesn't want to again is because she's afraid of him. A few professors walk up to the two of them, and thank Margaret for exposing the mentalist. Margaret tells Tom to start the class without her, and show the class the photograph for a good laugh. Tom leaves, and Margaret asks what the other professors want, when one of the professors starts telling her about a telepathy experiment that they did with someone. Margaret tells them to test it on her, and she gets every card right because of the reflection in his glasses. Tom is showing the class a video of a woman moving objects without touching them, and then making a frog's heart beat faster or slower just by looking at it. The scene then fades to a building with billboards of Simon's upcoming show on them. There is a conversation on a talk show between a few doctors, believers, and Margaret, who is a skeptic, about Simon's upcoming show. Simon's publicist asks what Margaret believes in and what made her turn into a lost, lonely woman. Margaret is fed up and takes her mic off and walks off mid-conversation. We then see that Simon was sitting and listening to everything from another room. Margaret makes front page news because of the broadcast, and Tom gets frustrated and yells that they need to investigate Simon now. He says if she won't do it, then he'll do it all by himself, and because of what happened on TV, they look like idiots, so they need to redeem themselves. Margaret calmly explains why they can't and tells a story about her son David. She says that when he was little, he was playing, when suddenly he just fell over, and she thought he was just playing. She then says that her and Simon were on a show together, both shouting at each other, when Simon started staring beside her as if he was seeing someone, which is something she expected him to do. He then said he saw a blonde boy by her side and asked if a young boy she knew had died, and she didn't answer because she was too stunned to speak. He then told her that the boy was asking her to let him go because she won't let him. Margaret never said anything, and she can't forgive herself for thinking, for even one moment, that what he said could be true. Tom looks shocked, and she tells him that Simon is a dangerous man and to stay away from him. We're now at Simon's show, and Simon is speaking to the crowd. A man is rolled out on a table with his stomach exposed, and Simon begins digging his fingers into an incision. The crowd gasps, and so did I. Simon washes his bloody hands off and pours water over the man before telling him he's cured. Tom is frantically setting up his radio to see if he can possibly connect to a frequency. Simon begins to talk about how he's never been proud of his gift. Simon begins to talk about how he's never been proud of his gift when he starts yelling for someone in the crowd. Tom clicks on his equipment during a quiet moment, and Simon hears and looks directly at the room he's in. Tom's equipment starts exploding, sparks begin flying everywhere, the glass in the room shatters, and Tom is now exposed to everyone. All of the lights in the theater start exploding, and the whole theater begins shaking. The noise is so loud, and everyone is grabbing their heads to cover their ears, and Simon is standing on the stage smiling. A phone rings in a house, and the camera pans over to a desk, but no one picks up. The lights flicker on, and a bloodied Tom walks in, yelling Margaret's name, but he doesn't see her anywhere. He calls her phone and hears it ringing on the floor when he suddenly finds... Margaret on the floor, almost dead. He screams for help and then calls 911. Margaret is being wheeled around on a gurney in a hospital, and Tom has to wait in the waiting room. Sally walks into the room and is worried about Margaret. She sits down next to Tom and starts rubbing his neck and asking what happened to his face before kissing his forehead. Tom is feeling guilty because he wasn't there with Margaret after she specifically told him not to go see Simon. Tom is teaching a class and goes to answer a call, but no one answers him on the other end. He says, "Silver?" and a bird crashes into the window behind him, shattering the glass. Tom is back in class speaking to the students and is interrupted again, but comes back into the room looking shocked by whatever he was just told. He dismisses the class and takes a few deep breaths before throwing everything off his desk and starts crying. A casket is pushed into an incinerator, and we see Sally and Tom in the background, solemnly holding each other. Tom is walking through a prison because he's going to see the mentalist that he helped expose. Tom thinks that the mentalist told Simon that they were going to be there, and the mentalist gets defensive and screams that he didn't do anything and only worked with Simon for a year, over 20 years ago. Tom is quickly done with the conversation and walks out while being screamed at. He is then in his car waiting outside of a theater when he sees Simon get into another car. Tom begins to follow the car and it suddenly swerves around a parked car, making him almost crash into that parked car. He gets stuck and has to catch up, but ends up getting lost. As he's trying to find Simon's car, he sees Simon's publicist walk out of a building and hits his brakes fast because he almost runs into a pedestrian. Simon's car pulls out behind him and quickly drives away. Tom's phone rings and he goes to grab it, but when he looks up, the pedestrian that he almost hit has him roll his windows down. She spits on him and then walks away. Tom gets out of his car and runs into the building that Simon's publicist walked out of. He goes up the stairs and enters a room with a long hallway and makes his way down when he hears a noise from behind him. He nervously makes his way through the hall and a door buzzes open. A woman walks out and then a man is suddenly behind Tom, asking if he has an appointment. He says that he was just looking for the way out and then leaves. Tom is now laying on a bed and his subconscious is talking to himself, and he is suddenly floating above himself. Tom wakes up from the nightmare and Sally is asleep next to him. He sees a hallucination of Simon in the room staring at him and panics and wakes Sally up. She begins worriedly asking if he's okay, but he starts shushing her. He quickly gets out of bed and turns on all the lights and runs down the stairs. The lights suddenly shut off and Sally is frightened because she has no idea what's going on. Tom starts heading towards the front door and is yelling Simon's name, thinking he's the one who's behind everything, and when he opens the door, he sees a dead bird laying on the doorstep. Tom starts running while Sally begs him not to leave her there alone. Tom ignores her and keeps yelling for Simon and runs into the middle of the road and a car swerves around him. He steps on broken glass and heads back to his place and Sally is upset that he left her there. She is worried about what is going on and notices that his foot is bleeding and is questioning why. When they re-enter the room, the entire place is trashed with papers everywhere and things knocked over and Sally looks terrified while Tom looks angry. The TV screeches on, and a broadcaster is sharing news that Simon has accepted to be a part of a study at the school Margaret worked at. This is when we officially learn that Margaret had died from a pre-existing vascular condition, probably similar to the one that the journalist from Simon's show died from. Tom goes to the school and throws one of the professors up against the wall because he is angry and wants to be a part of the committee investigating Simon. Tom is packing up a car and Sally is begging him not to leave her and investigate Simon, but he does anyways. There is a news story showing all the things that the doctors will be testing on Simon and shows fans outside talking about the upcoming experiment. Simon is walking through a crowd explaining why he's doing it and the main professor is explaining to reporters how great of a day it's going to be. The reporters leave the room and the professors and the university's cameras stay. Tom is there and is being reprimanded and told to stay quiet because he's just an observer. Simon walks in and the professor welcomes him and introduces him to the other doctors. Simon says that there is another person there, and that's when Tom and Simon are officially introduced. Tom looks really angry, and Simon talks about how he's been following him very closely. Simon sits at a desk and the lights start to flicker before starting the first experiment. We see a documentary-style video explaining the first experiment with three cameras, which Simon ended up projecting pictures of his thoughts onto the Polaroid camera. The next experiment was him bending spoons, followed by an experiment of him distorting the flow of water so it wouldn't touch him.
This film shows the first 6 days of investigation carried out in the Scientific Paranormal Research Center with Mr. Simon Silver. All the images correspond to the filming of real experiments. No scene has been recreated. This is Simon Silver. For the following experiment, Silva received three different models of still camera. A middle-range digital camera with a fixed lens focused on infinity, a conventional analogical camera with a 50mm lens focused on infinity, and an instant Polaroid camera also focused on infinity. Silver's attempts with the digital camera did not produce any positive result. The second camera registered only partial results, insufficient for a positive evaluation. Only the Polaroid camera allowed the apparent projection of Silver's thoughts onto the photographic plate. There is no scientific explanation for these results. The cylinder, or gizmo, which Silver was provided with in order to concentrate the flow of his thoughts, was carefully checked before and after each experiment in order to rule out any possible manipulation. Silver claims to be capable of bending metal at a distance without needing to touch it. However, during the course of these tests, this could not be experimentally confirmed. Following a more relaxed protocol, Silver was allowed to touch the metal, which, as can be seen in the film, was indeed bent. Visual analysis of the film is insufficient to determine whether Silver possesses extremely strong fingers and great control of micro-manipulation movements, or whether the distortion is in fact caused by paranormal ability, as he claims. Later, Simon Silver held his hand out to the continuous flow of a running tap. As the images show, the flow of water was notably deviated by some kind of external stimulus around Silver's hand. The difficulty in measuring this distortion in a conclusive manner means this demonstration has been excluded from any experimental evaluation.
Tom is in a room with a student named Ben, who is watching the videos from the experiments with him. Tom is explaining how Ben is the only person who can find an explanation for everything to prove Simon wrong, and Ben is feeling the pressure. Loud noises keep happening in the background, and equipment explodes every now and then, and Ben looks nervous, but Tom isn't fazed. Tom is explaining how everything is false because no one has powers, and that he needs to find the proof in the footage. Tom walks away and is in his car outside of the random building from earlier. We cut back to Sally staring out of a window, and her dad asks if she's okay. Tom is walking through the same hallway as earlier, but this time he doesn't look scared. He sees two people sitting on a bench, and the door buzzes again, and the same woman from before walks out. Tom sits by the two people, and when the door buzzes open again, he runs inside and enters a darkly lit hallway. He walks into one of the rooms that has a red curtain, a leather sofa, and a long line of salt on the floor from one end of the room to the other. Simon walks out and asks him to sit down, and Tom quietly does. As Simon is speaking to him, he opens a safe hidden behind a painting and puts something inside. Simon starts to feel the wall and continues to talk to Tom before saying that he has to go and they'll see each other again. Tom didn't say one word the entire time and is shocked by what just happened. Multiple reporters are standing outside in the rain reporting about Simon's final show, and Sally is driving back into town and turns off the car radio. Simon is sitting down and begins speaking to his audience, asking what they came there to see, when he starts levitating, and the crowd goes wild. Tom is sitting in the crowd and is unamused. The professor who did the experiments calls Ben, saying he's on his side about Simon and wants to know what information he has against him before he publishes his results, but Ben says he has nothing. He's unable to prove that Simon is a fake. Tom is in the bathroom when another man walks in, goes to the bathroom, and suddenly appears behind Tom while he is washing his hands. Sally walks into the room where Ben is in and asks what he's doing there. Ben is glad she's there, and she sees that he's been looking over all of the footage, but just wants to know where Tom is. Ben tells her how Tom is at the theater, but he knew she'd be by and said that he wants her to wait there for him. We cut back to the bathroom where Tom is being choked out by the man. Tom starts to hit him, slam him into walls, eventually gets out of the chokehold, and throws him onto the sink and breaks it. Sally asks why Simon is wearing a watch and asks Ben to split the image into two. Tom is thrown into a stall where he hits his head on the toilet. The man starts to drown him in the toilet water and Tom passes out. The man throws him into the wall before punching him over and over until he passes out. Sally is watching the video footage from the last experiment and really wants to focus on the watch. She notices that both people in the experiment are wearing analog watches and figures out that it's giving a code. Tom stumbles into the theater where Simon is doing a show. Ben and Sally are going over the footage, and they are shocked when they come to the realization that Simon isn't actually blind. The professor is about to make an announcement to reporters about his findings about Simon when we cut to a bloodied Tom walking through a set of doors and screaming at Simon during his show. Everyone in the auditorium turns and looks at him. Tom admits he wasn't able to prove Simon wrong, and a man interrupts and asks if he can put his arm down. And Tom tells him to, but the man says he can't. Tom tells him not to believe everything Simon tells him, and the man slowly puts his arm down and then sits down. Simon yells at Tom for questioning his power and threatens to hurt him. Tom is ignoring him and talking to the audience. Simon starts grabbing his head, his glasses fall off, and he starts screaming Buckley, which is Tom's last name, over and over while the room shakes and lights explode. Tom stands there unfazed while the audience is scared. Everything stops and Simon asks Tom how he did that. Tom throws a quarter at Simon and he catches it, and Tom calls him a phony before walking away, while Simon keeps asking how he did that. The film ends with Tom reading a letter that he wrote Margaret that I think is really sweet.
Dear Margaret, even today I'm not exactly sure when everything ended. I wanted to cry, feel anger, grief, to feel, just like I used to. A whole life denying myself, searching in silence for someone like me. A whole life looking for an answer. Without finding it. I learned so many things from you. But I forgot the most essential thing.
How did you know that?
Because I'm psychic. Silver? It was me. All along. Wasn't it, Margaret?
Where did you spring from? Why are you with me?
It was me. All along. You can't deny yourself forever.
You did most of the magic by living in the wrong place.
I did what you'd have wanted. But I'll never forgive myself for not revealing myself. For not at least giving you the consolation of knowing. There is something else. But you deserve more. Today, you deserve everything. You can't deny yourself. You can't deny yourself forever.
That ending monologue reveals that Tom actually possessed paranormal powers the entire time, and that all of the strange events that were happening around him were because of him. Tom had denied his abilities up until the very last moment, and that's when he put his powers to the test against Simon. So when Simon is standing on the stage yelling at Tom how he did that, it was because Tom had been the one who had made the room shake, not Simon. That ending monologue actually had my jaw on the floor because I did not see that twist coming. Tom had sought out Margaret so he could find out if there were any others possibly out there like him, but they all turned out to be frauds. someone named Taylor Holmes had a really good thought about the ending of the movie, saying, "The movie is about finding peace with God in the face of science that seems to counter him, or finding peace in the face of nothing that is staring you down." Dr. Matheson died struggling in the face of nothing, afraid that there was nothing in the great abyss beyond. She was keeping hope alive for her son, hope that he'd have another moment in the sun before he dies and heads into oblivion. But Dr. Buckley pulls the ceiling down on Silver, and he also pulls the plug on Dr. Matheson's son. Why? Because Buckley's existence is the proof of the great beyond. He also mentioned that this movie was clever. He also mentioned that this movie was clever in making us think about the larger questions in life. According to an article on Signal Horizon, there are actually several similarities of events that happened in this movie to actual cases of fraud and paranormal claims. In 1986, a reverend named Peter Popoff was exposed when someone discovered that he was being fed information about the people in the audience. How they did that exactly? By using radio equipment, just like Tom used when exposing The Mentalist. Clearly, the cast was impressed by the script because everyone who was a part of this film, Elizabeth included, said that they were drawn to the film because of the smart script in the cast. Although Elizabeth had a minor role in this movie, I thought I would still include it because she still had a pretty good amount of screen time. I also thought it was cool how her character was the one who figured out that Simon was a phony in the end. Coming straight from Martha Marcy May Marlene and Silent House, Elizabeth said that this movie was the biggest set she had ever been on, which made me laugh considering she had Marvel movies in her future without even knowing it.
Did it feel more like a studio picture in a way?
It was kind of like the biggest set I'd ever been on. I'd only done things that were like dime budgets. So it felt really, I've never felt like I've been treated better in my life. It was so nice. And the Spanish crews are just unbelievable. They work so fast. And I would find out like the next day that they shot things that were supposed to be shot the following day because they were ahead of schedule, which never happens.
Overall, Red Lights was an okay film for me. It's not one that I ever feel like I need to watch again, but I'm glad that I did one more time because I didn't remember anything after my first watch. Now I feel that I can definitively say that I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. I feel like this one is a good one-time watch, and I think that the ending was really good and really shocked me, but it was too bad that the rest of the movie was pretty forgettable. I think that the first time I watched it, I only paid attention to the parts that Elizabeth was in, and then ignored every other part. Personally, this is one of the Elizabeth Olsen films that is rated on the lower end for me, which makes sense because it holds a 30% critic score and a 36% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. I know that there are people out there who really love this movie, and that's okay. I'm just not one of them. I found myself getting really bored in the first half. Maybe it had a little to do with the fact that I had to type the movie out the entire time, but I don't think that's the full reason why. Other people and critics say that the movie is boring, so I promise I'm not the only one. This film did have its jump scare moments, but the film failed to capture my attention sometimes, and I can honestly say that I only watched this film twice for Elizabeth. If not for her, I wouldn't have even known this movie existed. Well, that wraps up my thoughts on this week's episode. So on next week's episode, I'm going to be talking about the film Liberal Arts, which makes me a little more excited since Elizabeth has a bigger role in that one. It's more fun to talk about the things she has bigger roles in, you know? I've also seen this film before, but I don't remember much about it, so it will be fun to rewatch it and see if it is better or worse than I remember. As always, if you like this episode, please share it, post about it, do whatever to help spread the word. It would mean so much to me. I also just wanted to say that I really appreciate all the people who have reached out to me to tell me that they're enjoying the podcast. It makes me super emotional, and I tell my husband everything that you guys say to me. If you can leave a like or a review wherever you're listening, then please do. But if not, I'm just glad that you stopped by to listen. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you all next week.